This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Grant Kirkhope, and it's so much fun to catch up. It's been a while.
It's been ages, hasn't it? It must be over a year short, or maybe even 2 years short. It's been a long time.
I think it's been two. I think the last time we chatted was when you were absolutely floored by getting the job to write the music for Mario Rabbids. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds true, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're talking about something that's a little bit of a departure for you. It's your film score for the award-winning short film, the animated film, The Wrong Rock. And it's just such an amazing, amazing film. It's won a number of awards. And so I guess right off the bat, how did you get involved with the project?
So it's actually a tie-in to when I worked at Rare back in the day, in the, you know, when I did all those games back then. There was a guy there called Michael Kaywood who worked on, he was on Cameo actually. And we did, I don't think we really ever really spoke at Rare, but we kind of knew, I knew he existed because we're, you know, the same company. And so you can skip forward about maybe like three or four years ago, in fact, I noticed he was on Facebook and we just kind of linked in on Facebook like you do, you know, to your old people that you kind of know. And he'd been working in Hollywood, actually. He'd been working on a lot of the big AAA, like Pirates of the Caribbean and Planet of the Apes and, you know, Bumblebee and big gigantic things as the, it's called the previous supervisor. So I guess they sort all the shots out, like animated-wise, like I remember the drawings, and then that's the shots that end up being in the movie kind of thing. So he's a supervisor for that. So he does his own stuff. And he did email me to say, by the way, Grant, nice to hook up. So I've got a friend of mine who is a musician. He'd love to you know, chat to you. And I said, oh, yeah, you know, forward my email along, you know, no problem. And he said, well, he said, and while I'm here, so I'm making I've done a short movie before, Devils and Dating. And it had like 15 million views on YouTube, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
And he said to me, you know, the composer that we used last time can't do it. Would you be interested in scoring my short movie? And I was like, yeah, because I thought that the quality was so high on the last one, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, totally. And because we sort of knew each other, it was like good fun. So we become friends again through the process. So that's how it started. So he started sending me little bits and pieces and then, you know, little scenes here and there. And I said, well, you know, I'll wait until the end. But I was massively busy, I think, on that time and Mario Rabbids still and stuff like that. So I did it sort of after all that was over. So I guess I must have scored it. It must have been that summer. Was it last year or the year before? Maybe the year before. Just the late summer to kind of, I did most of the work on it. It was nice to have another fellow Brit in LA to talk to, you know. And his wife, Julie, you know, she's also a producer on the film. And this is just a baby too they have as well. So, yeah, no, it's been a really... a really rewarding thing to do. It was great fun, and it was nice for me to kind of stretch my composing bone a little bit to be something a bit different to I normally do.
Yeah, for sure. And what's so interesting is the story is it's fairly simple. Martin is a mushroom, and he's born on a rock where he doesn't feel comfortable with the other mushrooms, and he looks across this wide body of water, well, wide from a mushroom's point of view, and he sees these other little mushrooms that are bopping around having a great time, and he thinks he'd be happier there, and it doesn't work out for him at first. And what I really love about the film score that you created is it kind of plays with that perspective too, because this is a, you know, a little film with huge concepts, and I love the opening because the music swells and you think we're about to see this really epic story, and then it just dwindles down and there's a little clarinet with Martin's theme.
I always like to write themes. You know, that's my favorite thing, you know. So I think that I was really trying to find something that I could kind of hook through the whole movie, really. And, you know, I think that because there's no dialogue, the music has to sort of carry all the kind of the emotional parts more than normal, probably, because... you know, they're not talking, you don't know what they're feeling, you know. So I was trying to write mushrooms feelings in the score, you know. So, and like you said, the start's got, it's very big, gigantic rush across the water. And then it kind of goes, oh, it's just the mushrooms dancing around on a rock, you know. So, yeah, I was trying to find something that was kind of simple and playful, but could carry a bit of weight so I could use it later in the movie, but in a minor version or, you know, a different version, the same kind of, you know, change the melody to be a minor version of that same theme so it can, you know, could represent other parts of the movie, you know.
it's amazing how flexible it is and how you're able to get so much emotion out of that really simple theme. And so was that the first little bit of music that you wrote? And, you know, what was the inspiration? I would love to know why the clarinet you thought was a great choice for Martin.
It was the first thing I wrote for the Meat Bag. I was trying to get the theme first, whatever I do. And I was thinking to myself, oh, you know, E.T.'s fantastic. Why can't I just write something like E.T.? So it's the same rhythm as E.T. So it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that rhythm. Right? So I forgot my own theme. I can't think how it goes. But it's the same rhythm as that, different notes. So I just tried to find something that I could, you know, that was simple. And I like the clarinet. It's got a little playful sound to it. And I like the bassoon too for that kind of thing as well. Often it's just little happy accidents that kind of you do something and it just kind of fits straight away. So, and Mike was super, he wanted to have a really good sort of kind of leitmotif thing that would represent, you know, Martin. So I felt like I got that quite quickly. So it was just, I don't know, just pops in your head, doesn't it? You sit there and think, right, it needs to be as good as E.T. I know it's not, but, that was the kind of thing that popped into my head right at the start.
Wow, that's so cool. I mean, just the fact that you've got melodies popping into your head all the time is just, that's magic to me. I mean, that's just really cool. So did you have to like play around with it a little bit until you finally got it in, I don't know, the form or the mood that you were really happy with?
I think our first little stanza came really quick, but later on it took a bit of time to get other stuff because Mike sort of like, he didn't want to have something that was very predictable. And even though I do think it does sound quite predictable, he wasn't keen on using the French horn, for instance. And I was kind of saying, well, you know, French horns do carry a lot of tunes a lot of time in movies. You know, it's a very noble instrument, you know. So there's a bit later where just as the logo pops up, that kind of French horn plays the main theme, but then it goes into a minor, it kind of finishes on a minor note to make you realise that it's sad. So you let that one go. But he wasn't very keen on having too much of that kind of traditional sounding stuff. Even though I still think it does sound traditional. So I guess it's you know, sometimes what gets into other people's ears is not what my ears hear. You know, it's like it's you have to, you know, when you're as a working, you know, media composer, you do find a lot of the time you try to work out what people really mean when what they say something because they can't express it in musical terms.
Yeah, and that must be just the very hardest thing because you know how to get that sound, but they're not really up on the instrumentation or the feeling or the tempo or the meter even. So you must have had a lot of interesting conversations with Michael.
Yeah, you do find yourself, you know, trying to get a common thread that you can both understand. Because sometimes, it's difficult to get that out of people when they just have a feeling, can't express it in a detailed way about how it should be musically, you know. So I guess you play around a little bit with that kind of stuff. And that's what I said, but you know, I think that the horn will be all right. you know. And I think he agreed. He liked it in the end. But I think that little bit was like he said, I'm not too sure about having the French horn because the French horns always carry the tune, and I understand that. But I was thinking, I don't know what else I could use because it's perfect for that bit. You know, I mean, I guess you could probably put in bassoons, but they haven't got that. I mean, they don't have that nobleness. I feel like the French horn has.
Yeah.
Even like a euphonium in a brass band has that kind of nobleness to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of scratching my head a little bit, but I mean, we got there in the end, but he wanted to, because I think the last composer he had, I mean, he wrote a great score, but it wasn't so sort of rich in leitmotif. And I guess I like to do that. I feel like it's my job to kind of, you know, give you a little thing to whistle down the street that you remember, you know. It worked out in the end. I just think at the start, I was thinking, if I can't use French horns, what else can I use?
Yeah. You know? Well, I remember one of the first times we talked, you mentioned that you're just a huge fan of British composers like Vaughan Williams and Elgar and Finzi. And I can totally hear them in that opening bit, especially with the clarinet. You know, it kind of reminds me of Finzi's clarinet concertos. So did you think back to what it was that you loved about those composers too and kind of use that to help define the instrumentation?
I think I always have a bit of that in my head a lot of the time. I think you can't help but, you know, your heroes are in your head talking to you all the time, aren't they? Selling, you know, saying, you should do it like this and do it like this, you know. So I feel like I've always got that in the back of my mind, especially the Elgar and the Vaughan Williams. I guess Sibelius too. I love his symphonies, you know. And I do like that kind of, I mean, I know Sibelius is a Finland person, but I do like that kind of classic English 20th century thing. You know, I just like that sound of all that kind of music. So I just think you can't, you know, constantly I've got like John Williams in my head and Elgar and Vaughan Williams and, you know, tons of other people that I keep wishing I was as good as, but never get there, you know. So You know, it's that thing, you know, you always fail because you're never as good as they are, you know. Yeah, I bet every composer's like that. I would hope that most composers constantly have a nagging in the back of their brain that it's not as good as everybody else.
Well, if nothing else, I suppose it spurs you on to just, you know, keep topping yourself and do better and better and get something that you're finally happy with.
I think I'm only ever, I guess, 75% happy with what I write, really. I guess I can always go back and go, you know, that could have been better. So, you know, that's the trials and tribulations of being a composer, right, I think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's probably why, Ravel, I'm thinking of especially, you know, went back and orchestrated some of his piano stuff because he was like, well, maybe it would sound better if it was an orchestra.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I can totally get that. I think that you always wonder, don't you, what, you know, and also it's hard when it's your own music because, you know, you could hear somebody else's music and think it's great, but you never really think your own music's that great because you wrote it right. So it's hard, that one, I think.
That you had to do a lot of the work, you know, I suppose, during the time after you could see what the animation was, right?
Yes, you have to wait for that thing to lock because, like, when you're writing it in MIDI, because it's not live orchestra, it's all MIDI. So when you're writing it like that, to cut out a couple of bars, it's a real pain to do it. You know, if you've got tons of time changes and things like that, you've got to, you know, get those back into the right place, and then it all messes up, and, you know, it's a real pain. So but Mike goes, yeah, I've just shortened it by 2 seconds. It's like, oh my God, just 2 seconds is like a, you know, a millennium, you know, it's just so, yeah, I think that that's just always a problem, you know.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, is it different from writing music for a cutscene in a game?
No, it's exactly the same. There's been a little bit of talk on Facebook the last couple of weeks about people saying video games and movie music and TV music, is it the same? Is it the same to write it? And I really feel like it mostly is. I mean, I think my composition process is exactly the same than what I'm doing. I mean, you know, if you're doing something with dialogue, you've got to take the dialogue into account and you don't write big music when they're talking, you know. And I know games need to be interactive sometimes and music have to loop sometimes too. So, but I still feel like the basic process of writing it is the same. You might have to take other things into account a little bit, but I always feel like it's just the same thing, really, just in a different wrapper.
Yeah, well, and ultimately the goal is to support whatever people are seeing on the screen, the emotions that their character in a game or in a film are going through. So that part of it, must be just the same.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, obviously with games, you can't always sculpt it if it's a gameplay part because people are playing it, you don't know what they're going to do. But you still have to think about the environment they're in or the circumstance that they're in to write the right music for it. So it's not a linear art form like a film and TV is, but I still feel like there's enough things that are the same to make it nearly the same.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that this let you, you know, stretch different muscles, try out different muscles and stuff. So what were some of the things that you were able to do differently that you couldn't do with, you know, the game scores that you've been working on?
It is great to be able to sculpt something to exactly fit what's going on. So, you know, when it's a sad moment or a happy moment or whatever it is, you can get it exactly right. And like you can in game cinematics, but during gameplay, you can't do that because it's too random, you know. So I think it's nice to be able to absolutely sculpt it. But I guess at the same time, it's often sometimes hard to make sure you get the melody, like a good leitmotif in there, because you might not have the space. You might only have 10 seconds to make something hook in there if you can. That's why I was trying to get that first melody for Martin to stick at the start, and then hopefully when I bring it out in other parts of the movie, like, you know, when it's a sad version or a happy version or whatever, people remember, oh, it's just, that's the same tune, but a darker version or a happy version or a faster or whatever, you know. So, like, I wanted to make sure I had something strong, well, hopefully that I think this strong, I don't know what anybody else thinks, but that would you could reuse. The great thing about, I think, movies and TV is that, you know, you often do get to write a few themes that you use throughout the entire thing. And lots of times with games, you don't get that. A lot of times with games, it's a new level, new theme, start all over again, you know. So you end up writing 50 billion themes for you know, for a game, and you might not write that many for a TV or a film thing, because, you know, it's not that big, you know, where games could be different environments all over the place. So it's nice to get to reuse themes, you know, like Darth Vader's theme pops up when Darth Vader comes on, or Luke's theme or whatever. You know, it's nice to be able to, you know, get that theme so that it sticks to the actor or to the character, you know. And I guess in games, you don't always get to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the other thing is that it's a short. It's only about 13 minutes long. So was it difficult to be so, I guess, concise with your music?
Well, I don't know, really. I sometimes think that I always say I'm not a very intelligent composer, because I don't think I am. And I just tend to just bumble along, you know, and it just sort of works eventually, a bit like that. So I just kind of mess around until I get that thing that I think's right. And then it's just, you know, I think it's just working into the right moments, isn't it? You know, I think that, you know, when, like in this movie, you know, when you're going to have to get Martin's theme, and you know, when he's sad and he can't get to the other island, and it's a big sort of gigantic string moment that you don't really expect to be in a movie like that. I probably overkilled it a little bit there, I think. But, you know, it's just getting the right moments. And of course, you know, you work with the director and they sort of say, yeah, that'd be good for that bit, but not so good for this bit, you know. So I guess it's a very similar process. I just think that, like you say, squeezing it into 13 minutes was a little bit tricky, and it only really had maybe a couple of leitmotifs in the entire thing. But, you know, I think that worked just right for the length of the movie, you know.
Yeah, I've watched it now, gosh, I don't even know how many times. And each time I see it, I notice more, like, really special touches. Like the first time that Martin gets to the rock where the mushrooms that he thinks he'd love more are. And there's like an older, bigger mushroom and then a little one. And the little one's all excited. And the big mushroom just sort of bends down and scolds the little one. And it's just such a neat moment, and I guess it just is a real testament to how much personality Michael and the team were able to give to all of these mushrooms. And so it must have been really an interesting process to kind of reflect that.
Yeah, and in that bit particularly, there's some low bass notes going on, and that's supposed to represent, I think it's called Grumpy, that mushroom, the nasty one. I think it's Grumpy. Yeah, so I put in some... There's kind of a jolly theme going on over it, but it's got these low bass notes, and you know it was hard to kind of make, because the motif for those jolly mushrooms is a little bit happy. It was hard to try and put something that made it darkened it down a bit, you know, with that, because it wasn't in a minor key, you know. So I just added in some bass notes that hopefully you pick up that's because he's a grumpy mushroom. Yeah, because Mike said, I need something to represent the fact that he's not very nice. And so I just, you know, stuck in some kind of bass notes that kind of, they do fit with the harmony, but not completely. I hope that maybe it subconsciously makes you think he's a bit of a nasty mushroom.
Yeah, and you can see it too, which, I mean, I felt so bad for Martin. And his emotional transformation is just incredible. When he gets back to the island where he was born and is looking over at the other one, and the cue that you wrote for that, From Despair to Hope, it's heartbreaking. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I really sort of, I said to Mike, this is my moment. You know? So I really blasted out that great big huge string melody thing, you know, that bit for the sad bit. And like I say, maybe it is a little bit overkill, but I said, you know, it'll get the point across.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because we've all had moments like that where you just think it's never going to turn out and you might as well just give up. And it just, wow, you really captured that. It's really emotional. ¶¶
you like it. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, Mike, Annie's wife, she wrote a book about it too. She's an author. She's like a kid's book. I mean, they were really adamant. They wanted the movie to have a really strong message, you know, that was like, you keep saying there's so many isms all over the world these days. You know, you wanted to try and just paint this simple little story that, you know, everybody feels like we're all on the same rock at the end of the day, right? You know, and it was like that. No matter what you think, we're all here together, you know. And I think that he was really super, super adamant to get that point across, you know. And I think it's a lovely little thing. And it's good, you know, because kids can watch it. And I mean, I've had feedback from a lot of parents saying that, you know, the kids really liked it and they got that, you know, he wasn't happy where he was and wanted to be somewhere else. And you can apply that to so many different scenarios in our lives today, you know, especially with kids at school and stuff. That I think Mike did an excellent job of finding the right story that really captured that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way the end of that track just sounds so resolute, and he decides to make a second attempt to get to the rock, and he's got some help this time from a few of the other mushrooms on his island and his little ladybug friend who's got her own issues going on. She's not really good at flying, but that journey is amazing because the storm comes up. It's like Shackleton's journey to South George Island. I mean, it's just
right. Yeah. Yeah. And I tried to write some sort of, you know, proper action music for that bit, you know, to try and kind of, you know, to convey the epic journey of the little mushrooms on the little log trying to get to the other island, you know. You know, maybe it's a bit overkill, I don't know, but I feel like the movie's got a lot of, like, high emotion in a little period of time. And I think that you don't expect it, a little jolly film, to turn out like that. And I feel like it's got a real depth to it. And that's what, I guess, Mike's brilliant storytelling for the whole thing, you know, and it just, I felt like I wanted to get that in the music. So it's not just a little jolly thing. It's got some real moments where you think, oh, this is a bit of a heart-wrenching story, and it's got a real message to it, you know.
Give away any spoilers, because it does have a really interesting and dramatic twist at the end. One of the things that I was really interested in the early discussions of this, Mike said he was only planning for it to be about a 5-minute film, and obviously it expanded, but were you on board for all of those changes as it was like evolving?
He must have already changed the time of it by the time I came on board. I mean, I think it was not last year, but the year before when I worked on it. And I kind of did little bits early in the year, then did most of it later at the end of the year. So it was more or less always going to be like that length. But I think he thought, you know, try to do an animation movie like that, you know, that's of that quality, like it looks like a DreamWorks movie, right? You know, is a ridiculous endeavor. So I think he thought 5 minutes is about all he can manage, because to get to that quality just takes such a lot of time. And they did it with using that Artella art platform. So there was lots of contributors from all around the world. So some people did, you know, everyone got little bits to do, and some people did more than others, and it was a bit like that. So, you know, it's a huge undertaking. To get to 12 minutes, I think it was like, oh, my God, you know, that's an awful big thing to do off your own bat, just sat at home doing it in between working at other jobs, you know. I think hats off to Mike and all of them, really, for to get to that quality is, I think, is incredible.
Yeah, and a lot of them are volunteers too, just spread out all over the world. So, but it must have been nice because you and Mike were both in LA, so you could probably, you know, have a quick little conference call or a visit or whatever. So that must have made things a little bit simpler.
Yeah, San Manuel Hills, he's up in Santa Clarita, so it's not too far away. So I drove up there a couple of times to see him and what have you. And also, they were going through the fact his wife just became pregnant, so that was, they had that old thing to worry about, having the baby and stuff. You know, that was another thing to chuck into the mix. So it was great us being here. We could talk, you know, I could call him anytime and say, I'm just having trouble with this bit, you know, have you got any ideas, you know? And so, yeah, it was handy that we're in the same town. I know there's quite a few people that in LA that worked on it. And, you know, because you've got friends in the industry. No, that was handy. But, you know, I just think it's a mammoth task to try and go, I'm going to do this and walk on our tail and get people from all over the world to contribute. I mean, sounds like a crazy man's idea, right, at the start of it.
Yeah.
It totally worked out. So, I mean, he's done a brilliant job. He really has.
Yeah, he totally has. And it's won a bunch of awards, as we mentioned. And it is available for anyone to see on YouTube, which is really, really cool. Because, you know, a lot of times these shorts that win awards, you only have a chance to see them at a film festival or in a theater as part of something. So,
it's great. It's also on Amazon Prime too now, so it's all there. It's there as well. So you can watch on Amazon as well. So no, it's just great. It just, like you said, it's hard sometimes because a lot of the shorts you never see them because you just, they're at an awards thing and you don't know what they look like. You see like a 10-second clip and you don't know what it's like. So I guess Mike also wanted to get it out onto YouTube and other places so any kids or anybody can see it, really. So it's great it's turned out that way. And as I say, it's on Amazon Prime now, so anybody can watch it.
Yeah, well, so what were some of the things that you really loved during the whole process that just made it fun for you?
Oh, it was great coming up with that first theme. I just thought it was just right, you know, and I was happy that I got that quite quick. And the big moment with the strings we talked about, I love doing that because I really just went, right, I'm just going to do this to a ridiculous degree. And he's going to say no, you know, like, you know, thinking I might as well do it just to satisfy myself. But he went, oh, no, I'll keep it. You know, I was like, oh, fantastic, you know. So, and also, you know, get right there, halfway through, you know, I'd like to have some kind of, you know, pop song at the end. And I was like, and every composer at that point kind of goes, oh, my God, he cringes at that thought, you know. There's going to be some pop song over the credits at the end. There's this band called The Misses. It's four ladies from, you know, Austin, Texas. Like, oh, my God, this is going to be a disaster, you know. And they wrote just the best song. When they sent it, I clicked it thinking I'm going to hate it. It's just so good. Like, the drummer, Andra, she wrote it. And I've just knocked out by it. I just think it's got the perfect sentiment. It's a great tune. My daughter's dancing around to it. God, this is a great tune, Daddy. You know, like, really... They did a great job on that song. And I think, you know, sometimes at the end of animation movies, the songs don't quite fit. But I just kind of feel like there was such a perfect choice. And Mike did all that. And I was a little bit like, you know, but brilliant stuff it was. They did a great job. They did.
Well, what's cool about it is the song really dovetails nicely with the end of your cue from Despair to Hope, because you've got those drums coming in. And so it's like, it's almost like a little preview of the song at the end with the Misses.
Yeah, I did that. I said, look, I think I can link it up. So I captured the first little bit of their song and just stuck it in the on the end of mine, and then, you know, time matched it up and then just kind of faded it down a bit so it kind of repeats it. So it went straight into their song, which I thought it worked out great, you know. But I love that. I think it's a great song. As I say, you just don't expect to like the song at the end, you know, it was such a great tune, and they did a fantastic job. They did.
Yeah, it's really fun to see, and like I said, you can see it over and over again, and the music is great, and your music is in Apple Music and Bandcamp and like everywhere, right?
Yeah, so yeah, I just took it everywhere. It's on Spotify and whatever. It's all over the place, you know. So yes, I've listened. See what you think, but I think it's good to watch with the movie. I think you get the real. You real feel for it when you watch the little. It's something I keep saying to people, you know, it's 30 minutes of your time in your day, and I guarantee you'll put a smile on your face when you finish it. And I really feel like it will, you know.
Well, I know that there are all kinds of things that you're working on that you can't talk about, but
of course.
But one that you can is that you just got selected to be part of the jury for the Music and Sound Awards that'll be handed out this summer. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, no, I've done a little bit of that, and I've done a bit of judging on. I think it's a MAGFest thing, maybe the last couple of years, or just on the orchestral section. So I get sent a few tunes to kind of, I know people always say this, but really is the quality really just blow you away. Like, I always think to myself, God, these guys are all better than me. Like, you know, why am I doing this work and they're not doing it instead of me, you know? It is a bit bizarre how writing orchestral music, it's become so more accessible because you can get these sample libraries for not a lot of money these days, and people can really mess around with the orchestra. Like, I think, you know, 10 years ago, you'd be thinking you'd never be able to, you couldn't afford it, you know. But there's so much stuff out there now that's cheap, that can run on quite a small computer, you know, with not a lot of RAM. And you can really mess around with the orchestra instruments and make something. I think it's, what a fantastic thing. Like, you can imagine back in the day, like, if Mozart or Handel actually had an orchestra that could just, you know, try it out, or without sitting on the piano and thinking, this will sound good, but I don't quite know if it will, you know. Or even John Williams writing back in his day that, He just had to play the piano part to Steven Spielberg and say, yeah, I think it'll be all right. It'll be all right when it gets to orchestra. You're never going to know, are you, until it gets there. So what a fantastic time for, you know, anybody who wants to have a crack at it to be alive, because you really can have a crack at it and make lots of mistakes like we all do, and find something that perhaps you like in the end of it. So I'm feeling that the Music and Sound Awards, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be good fun to do. I mean, as I say, I don't know whether they're going to send me 850 soundtracks to listen to and try and get through them all. I don't know how that's going to work out, because I'm busy at the same time. I'm hoping they might get like a shortlist together, and then I'll get to listen to those. I don't know. But also with games, because games can be like immensely long, like, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours sometimes with some of the game soundtracks. So I think I've got my work cut out for me, I think. But I say it's Winifred Phillips. I mean, I do know her a little bit. Is doing the judging on the game one as well, so that'll be good to, you know, hook up with her.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if nothing else, it'll give you kind of a glimpse into what other people are working on, for sure. And it's going to be interesting, I think, listening to these things with, you know, a different set of ears than you would have if you were just, you know, listening to music in a game and not having to judge it.
Yeah, I'll probably just get depressed because everyone would be really great, and I'll think, oh, they're all much better than me. I should quit. You know, that's what I usually think. So I'll probably get that, I'm sure. But you know, I'm expecting the ones that have been out there this year. I think I know what they're going to be, probably. You never know. Things pop up that surprise you, really. And it's, as I say, you know, when I'm writing, I try not to listen to any other game composers. I will listen to movie stuff, but I won't listen to game stuff. I'm trying to say I should try and write something that's just, you know, it comes out of my head, not anybody else's, game wise, anyway. You know, so I do try to avoid that. So it'll be good to catch up with some of the stuff that I probably missed this year or last year, sorry, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Grant, it's always fun to talk with you. And again, I love your score for The Wrong Rock, and hopefully we'll have a chance to catch up again soon.
Yes. As I say, I've got a couple of things going on this year. So when I can talk about it, I'll let you know.
Fantastic. Thanks so much.